Hello.
Hannah, how are you?
Oh, good. I seem to have this is on my phone, this one.
Oh,
Can
that's,
you hear me?
yeah, I can hear you really good.
Oh, well, maybe that's better than the computer
Well,
because
I'm using the computer, but that's really good.
well, because on my computer it says you're offline. I've been sort of anyway. Where we'll go with the phone.
Yeah. Is that okay for you?
Yeah, it is. I think it is.
How are you doing? Are you better?
Hey?
Are you feeling better?
No, I am a little bit better, but I'm not really good. It seems to be taking, it's just the coughing and my lungs are still okay, but the muscles, my breathing muscles, are getting a little bit weak.
I hear you. That's terrible.
So, so I'm unable to cough properly,
Oh, that's
and that gets to be a little bit of a worry because, because that just means that I'm more likely to get an infection drop into my chest.
not nice.
But anyway, I've actually kept myself fit, and I'm now back on deck.
I'm really glad to hear that. We're all glad to hear that.
Now, what I would like to ask if we could go for half an hour instead of an hour.
Absolutely. We can go
All
for
right.
10 minutes if you want. Whenever you're ready to stop, we stop.
Okay, that would be really good because I just find it, really quite tiring, but I'm really happy to be doing this. I've got to tell you how much I appreciate
Well,
it.
me too. All of us do, Hannah. We've got some really nice responses, wonderful responses from people listening to you. They really love it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
So let's begin. I'll introduce you, and we'll begin from there. Is that good for you?
Yep, that's good.
Okay. We have the opportunity again to have conversations with Hannah. And Hannah has been with the Aboriginal people, the Wandjina people, over a 35-year period, aiding them and befriending them and actually moving into their wisdom. And we're very fortunate to have Hannah work with us, give us some of her wisdom, Aboriginal wisdom. And so we go on now, and here we are. Hannah, are you there?
Yes, hello, good evening.
Hi, Hannah, how are you doing?
Oh, good, thank you.
Thank you. Hannah, could we look at the Seven Sisters? So do you have any information about from the Aboriginal people about the Seven Sisters?
To be honest, my knowledge of the Seven Sisters is not good. And so what I'd like you to do is to just to give me time to refresh my knowledge, with the Ngarinyan. They'll think I'm really stupid, but I need to refresh my knowledge on the Seven Sisters because the Pleiades, they are important. I know, secondhand, Noongar, Southwest Western Australian knowledge, but that's different. I don't want to speak about that. I really only feel comfortable talking from my decades of being enculturated and immersed in Ngarinyan. So, can we put that question off
We can.
for another week or two?
Certainly we can. And whatever you
Cool.
might dig into there would be wonderful for us to hear, because there are a lot of people who are very interested in the constellations and their intrinsic activity and knowledge and wisdom with the Aboriginal people and how they saw that. But I would love to leave that go until you feel comfortable with that.
Thank you.
Can I ask you about how an Aboriginal elder becomes predominant in the tribe, how that works?
Well, Shanti Mae, there's two ways. One way is that from birth, a child may be identified by another, what we call shamanic elder, as having the sight or the gift, or as they call it, being a bunman. Bunman is spelt Banman, and a bunman can be a woman or a man. And so a child can be born with this, which is from an ancestor who has gone before. That child will be watched, in a sense, guarded through childhood, through adolescence, and guided, quite particularly through adolescence, in order for that child to develop responsibly in the gifts and visions. Now, one of my children, that is one of Muldjali's children, actually was one such child. And when he came down from the Kimberley to Perth to go to boarding school, the school went away on a camp to a place called Dwelling Up, which is in the forest. When they were there, and he would have been, a year five, so maybe 8 or 9 years old. When they were there, one of the children got quite ill with something wrong with the stomach, and this little boy was writhing and groaning. And of course, at this camp, they're miles away from any doctors or, help, probably several hours away. So this young lad was just walking past the room when he heard this groaning, and he put his head around the door and said to the teachers, "Hey, what wrong with him? He got guts ache." And they said to him, "Gideon, just go away. This is, we're dealing with an emergency here." And Gideon says, "He right, I can fix him." And Gideon walked into that room, and he's a boy, he's a little boy. And he rubbed his hand under his armpit, in his armpit, rub, 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 rub. And then he put his hands on this boy's stomach. And then he did it again, and he did it a third time. At the end of the third time, the kid's whatever bellyache, guts ache, had gone. And Gideon just turned around and giggled, he goes, to the teachers there, who were absolutely gobsmacked by what they'd just seen. And so Gideon and the boy got up and walked away.
That's really beautiful. Wow.
So he's a boy, who he's now a man, and he's back up north in country, and hopefully, as a young man now in his early 20s, he will be navigated in his Bunman skills. There's always a danger, though, because if such a person starts drinking alcohol,
Oh, yeah.
then the vision doesn't develop.
That makes sense. And
Yeah. So
Hannah, go ahead, please.
the other way is that through life experiences, and it can be later on in life, there's two pathways here. One is what they call song master or song man, which is a bunman, and the other is a healer, which is also a bunman. And they can be one and the same, but often they're in different people. And it's often that the healer bunman male stays unmarried. he stays single and he becomes a kind of feared in an awe kind of way, because he is the one who can sing a person to die and sing a person to be well and sing opponents and so on. So in a way, that's a kind of what we might call sorcery. But that Bunman is quite feared, and, you know, doesn't engage readily in conversation with anybody. Mm-hmm. The other one, the song man, the song master, he's the one who has something come over him where he tunes in to the cosmos, in a sense, like the conduit opens and a song pours into him. It can be in any language, and he sings that song. And when he starts singing that song, there are people around him who are repeating it, and it's sung over and over and over and over again. And this is quite an exhausting experience for this Bunman. And so, you know, he's really looked after while he's receiving this knowledge and this song from the other side. And as he describes it, he gets on the cord, and the cord is an energy cord between this world and the next. It has a physical landscape as well. And he goes roaring down the cord, but he has to hang on to it and stay hanging on to it, because if he lets go, he'll die. So he hangs on to the cord, and the people on the, you know, the spirit people on the other side give him the song to bring back. And so that's what happens, and he brings it back. And this could go on over many, many days, which is, I suppose, why it's so exhausting.
The cord, is that a physical or is that a ethereal component?
Well, the way they've described it to me, it's an energy cord like electricity. So it sounds like a physical cord in the sense of physics, a wave, you know, a frequency.
Now that that's interesting. Go ahead,
please. And so, you know, my interpretation of that is that he's in his openness, he's open to a particular frequency through which he can travel to get the song of the universe.
That's really beautiful. Can I tell you a story? It's quite deep, Hannah. When I was in the Kimberley, I went to the Crocodile Dreaming. You know that place?
Yes, I do.
And that was painted by people who were not permitted to do that. I know. I understand that. When I was there, Hannah, this is for me quite a deep point. I saw the song men, and I saw the song men dancing, and I saw them singing, and I saw them creating through their songs and their dances, very specific, actually the physical being of crocodiles. And I saw them like a highway, not fast, but maybe like a road, one after the other being materialized into the world.
That it's an experience that when people hear you tell stories like that, you know, there's a kind of a, oh yeah, okay, slight smile. It's a disbelief because it hasn't been their experience. But I know what you're saying, because I've also watched Muljali at the end of a very, very difficult negotiation with the Native Title Tribunal, and they got on their plane and went away. And the families, all the black fellas who remained there around the campfire, there was, you know, probably half a dozen white fellas and maybe 100 or so blackfellas, Muldali got into the middle and was recounting this story of what happened with the tribunal and how, for the first time in Australia's history, blackfella, Aborigine man, stood up, lawman to lawman, with proper judge, and he stood up and told his story law way for the first time. And as this rhythm developed of him telling this story and his body started moving with his passion and enthusiasm, he just literally morphed into a brolga.
What is that?
And his movement became like a primal brolga dance. And I was sitting there just astonished. You shake your head. What am I seeing? But the other white fellows saw it too. But, of course, we just spoke about this after, and I just said, Muldali, you were brolga. And all he did was laugh,
What is brolga?
Well, a brolga is a beautiful large bird, like a jabiru, that dances.
Wonderful.
Yes. So I've seen that another time when I was, in potential danger of all places in a supermarket, but I was in potential danger because I'd trodden on the toes of the leaders, not the elders, the leaders of a political group in another, in another part of, in near Broome. So this fellow was not in his country. However, I'd trodden on his toes and offended him. And Muldali and I were wheeling the trolley around like, Darby and Jones. And all of a sudden, Muldali just completely evaporated. He disappeared. And I was walking on my own, and I just thought, oh, well, he's gone off, he's, looking for batteries or something. And at that point, I looked down the aisle, and I saw this other man looming toward me with considerable malice in his face. And as he moved toward me, and I really felt quite scared for a moment, and I'm thinking, oh, come on, you're in a supermarket, nothing can happen to you here. And as he walked toward me, he's walking toward me with his trolley, and I felt quite threatened, actually, when all of a sudden Muldali appeared next to me and slightly in front, which forced this guy to veer around me. Now, I can't explain that. I can't explain how Muldali was there and then he wasn't there and then he was there. I don't have any explanation for that. Likewise, I've seen one old man who I was very fond of and we were quite close. He was, in his last probably week of life. He already had massive edema in both legs. His kidneys were failing. He was what they call inning and outing, which is knowing that death's approaching, and they go down the cord and meet the people who've gone before and come back. He could only move around on a walking frame with enormous difficulty. Anyway, he said to me, what that old man tell you? What that old man tell you about that family relations? Now, what had happened was someone had accused Muldali of not being the right way son of, of his father, that in fact his father was a wrong way man. And Muldali was, of course, extremely upset by this. Had it been true, it would have made a mockery of his entire life. And And so this old man, Goanali, he said, "So who told him that one?" And I named the man who accused him of being a bastard son. And Goanali got up off the chair and walked off the veranda out into the paddock, raised both his hands heavenward and called, he's another songman, called out in a voice that had a strength and a power the likes of which I'd never heard before and I've never heard since. Mm. And he called out into the universe, whatever it was. He turned around and he walked back. Now, this man hadn't walked for a year. And he walked back and he sat down next to me and he looked at me sideways, and it was a look in his eyes which was which was a very different expression. And he looked at me and he said, "He dead man that one."
Wow.
And sure enough, within 6 months, that man was dead.
Oh. See, this is so amazing. I feel that part of what the Aboriginals may have to say, and I do not know, you know much, you know I don't. One of the parts that I am intuiting that the Aboriginals may be offering humanity, at least those who are willing, is to experience things they have never experienced before, to see what they have never seen before, to know what is really deep within them, and to be fearless in that. Would you say that that has some validity?
I'm not sure that they want us to... I don't have a sense that they are trying to teach us or anything like that. But what I do have a sense of is that if we are receptive and we're walking shoulder to shoulder and we're in each other's presence energetically, and it's not one over the other, and it's not there to help. Mm. And as a white fella, you're not there to help, you're not there to teach, you're not there to do all the arrogant things that white fellas think they have to do, but where you are just walking in the landscape, shoulder to shoulder, companionably, in each other's presence, that this other experience opens up. And when you and when it opens up, it feels normal.
Yes.
And you know, you can't actually switch being Western off, being thinking white. You can't actually switch it off. You do gasp.
Okay.
But after a few times, you stop gasping and you start seeing. You start seeing into the bush, into the rocks, into the water. You start seeing in a... It's like almost, it's multi-dimensionally. It's a bit hard to describe, Shanti Mai, but there's a lot, there's a particular essence of light which turns on in a way. It doesn't go on. It just becomes this particular quality of light, which is quite a shiny light. And that light seems to enlighten the whole of the surroundings, the bush, the trees, the bark, the ants, and the people. And it's a kind of a luminous, really. It's kind of a luminosity. And when you're open to that, honestly, the way you hear and see and smell and resonate, vibrate, is completely different to when you are in your conscious, controlled, normal kind of white fella state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Contained in your beliefs and so on like that.
Yeah, and it's not something they can teach you.
No.
It's something that becomes your experience when you're in that space and presence. And I don't think you have to be with an Aboriginal person to experience that.
Agreed. And that's the most important point of all, is that one cannot really be taught. One either enters the experience or not. And I sense, at least through my own companionship with people, so to speak, is that you can hand them the key. It's already within them. You kind of show them where it's at. And either they have the experience or they don't have the experience. And until they have the experience, it's all theory and may not even be very interesting after a while. But when they turn the key, such as I say, cease to judge people totally and see what happens with that open space. Is that what you mean?
It's cease to be self-aware.
Right.
You know, it's to lose self-consciousness.
Right.
It's to be empty of yourself in a way.
Exactly.
To empty myself of myself, so that I stop seeing and being aware of myself as a body and a mind and a whatever, however I describe it. When you cease to be aware of yourself, there's a different vibration altogether.
Yes.
You know, it's you realize that the trees and the table and the chairs and the everything is all resonating, and you're actually in this fractal energy of resonance.
Yes. Which you always have been, but you haven't noticed it usually by what you believe, what you think, what you accept, and what you reject.
Well, you know, I think lots of children experience being alive in this way.
Yes.
Before they're taught to be egocentric and the ideology of individuality and individual personal rights.
Exactly.
You know, before they get all that indoctrination in how to be a good Western thinker, in their innocence, I'm quite sure they experience life in this multidimensional, timeless way. Because, you know, Shantimai, this is what the dreaming is. When you are open like that and you cease to be self-conscious, you are in the dreaming. That's where you are.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think we're saying the same thing in a very, not even a different way, just with different terms, because my sense is that when one will seriously experiment, I feel that judgment, now just we're going to take consideration, just judgment is to cease to do that, be aware, to cease to judge, means really to stop comparing yourself with others, isn't it? And then that wall drops down, and there's an openness, and in my view that luminous experience of selflessness has a chance, because people are so busy with their mental worry and concern and comparison, and when they will just be aware to be silent there just for a minute, just for a minute, and be open, and that openness, Hannah. It resembles what you were speaking about the Songman. When he's open, then the entire universal intelligence, so to speak, however we may frame that term, is not only available, it's the only presence that there is. Would you say?
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's what's so funny. And I you know, you're talking about judgment of its very nature means somebody is right and somebody is wrong.
Yes.
And judgment and that therefore carries with it a whole emotional content.
Oh boy.
And that emotional content, you know, invariably has anger or disgust or you know, whatever head-shaking feeling it carries with it.
Yes.
And that in turn presumes, it acts on the assumption, I wouldn't do that or be that, and I'm right.
Yes.
Okay, so as soon as the I comes in there, there is a sense of self and a self-definition. I am this, I am good, I am well-behaved, I am honest, I am all of these things. and when you start going that, what you're doing is actually you're building a framework of ego, which becomes very difficult to shed. When you're with blackfellas, or when you shift out of that space, and I think anybody can do it in a, you know, in a garden or in the environment somewhere, in nature.
Yes.
when you move out of that self-consciousness and that framework that you've built for yourself to operate through, when you move out of that, something absolutely extraordinary happens. Absolutely extraordinary. The numinous.
Yes.
That which, about which we can't know or describe, the numinous courses through our bodies in a way which, you know, where the fluidity of it makes you feel like you're just dissolving completely.
Yes. And people fear that, you know, this is an interesting thing. People fear that, at least they tell me they do. Oh, I fear that I'm going to disappear. I say, you're going to, you know.
Oh.
I fear that I'm going to lose myself. Mm. Yes, you're going to lose the self that you think you are. You definitely, and that's such a wonderful thing. So, yeah, thank you for that, Hannah. That was beautiful. And, you know, I would like very much, I know that you have only a little time today. I would like very much for you to speak maybe the next time or now if you would like, about your relationship with David Muljawari. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Muljawari.
Muljawari, thank you. I have his Yarrow book here. And
what a stunning book.
Yes, yes. And I think you are both very privileged to know each other. Must have been a very wonderful relationship.
It was, and it continues to be, Shanti Mahi.
Yes.
And I would like to leave it till next time.
Great, great. But let's do that, because I think there's a lot to be said in that and a lot to be shared. I just am very curious about how you two were together and some of the things that occurred.
Well, I'd be very happy to talk about that, so we'll make another appointment.
Okay. So thank you, Hannah, so much. It's such a rich experience just speaking with you. I'm coming to Australia in October, and I would like to meet you then. I'm coming to Perth.
Well, I look forward to going bush with you, Shanti Mahi.
We should do that. We must do that. I have to take time for that, so we will plan something, okay?
Yes, you've got to keep a day and a night.
Oh, I'll keep 2 or 3 days and 2 or 3 nights, whatever we need. Okay?
Excellent.
Thank you.
All right, then.
See you next
time. Thank you. All right, then. Thank you.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye.
Good night.